Hi, I want to welcome you to this golf and
Listen, golf
and how to share Christ.
All right. Why are we doing this?
Well, it's really interesting. Both of us have played golf since we were kids. For me, I started golf when I was like 8 years old.
I was probably 17.
Okay, so we were young people. And it was fascinating to me how if I look back at all the years of golf, that there was a lot of evangelism done on the golf course.
Yeah. It's a sort of a social game.
Yeah.
You're with, if you play 18 holes, it's generally
2 hours or 4 hours of nine or 18, hours.
So even, you know, if you join in with a stranger, that stranger cannot get away from you for the next 4 hours.
I mean, a lot of people talk about like golf and businesses advantage. So, you know, they play golf to be with clients and but yet for the gospel, though some of those excellent dynamics are there where you establish talking, listening repeatedly with people that you may not know, and a year later they're your friends. Hey Henry, hey Steve, you know, and it's fascinating to me how beneficial for the gospel is.
What's fascinating to me is if you get hooked with a stranger for 4 hours, after 4 hours that person is no longer a stranger.
Right.
And you both, and it's interesting, golf is sort of a slow game. You hit the ball, and then there's maybe a 100, 200 yard walk.
Right.
You're together, and so all conversation is part of golf. And people, if you're with someone that you don't know, eventually someone will say, so what do you do for a living, or do you have any kids, or you're married? I mean, really, you end up talking about life.
Right, and one of the funny things is that usually happens like in hole 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And then sometimes people are like, what do you do? I'm a minister, and they had already been cussing and swearing.
They hit the
hole 1 and 2.
You can see their wheels going.
Yeah, hold on. And they're all like, dude, you got to be kidding me. So it is pretty fascinating. So we are going to do a class on the theology of golf, the praxis of people smart, the etiquette of golf, and also some evangelism, sharing your walk with God in golf. And we're going to feature the YouTube videos of Paul Wilson, who has a teaching school out of Las Vegas,
right.
Bears Best.
Right.
So, you know, so we're going to get, actually, we're going to make this practical. We're going to learn how to golf.
Yeah, so it's a multi-level course.
Yeah.
Because you're going to learn how to deal with people on the golf course. You're going to learn how to do evangelism on the golf course. You're going to learn about the metaphors of golf, because golf has a lot of metaphors for all of life and Christianity.
Yep.
And you're going to learn how to golf better.
I know. I mean, these mini courses are crazy. They're just crazy courses. And this one is fun because we both have golfed and we've seen how golf can benefit the gospel.
And, you know, golf is good for exercise and all of those things. But if we're going to spend a little time doing it, we might as well make it for the gospel.
Right. So let's start with the first presentation is the theology of golf. I didn't even know there was a theology of golf.
I don't know if there is officially. Maybe we're starting this, a whole new
movement. A theology
of golf.
And in the theology section, we're going to compare or see how the big theological Christian ideas, theology, connects to the game of golf.
Yes.
Which then later in the presentation, we're going to connect it to practice and also
evangelism.
Okay, I'm looking forward to this. Okay, Providence.
James 4:13. Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money.
Why? You don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a while and then vanishes.
Okay. So
that's our opening present slide for golf.
For golf.
It's like, I did not want to play this game.
So how does it relate to golf? That life is all about God's providence.
It is.
And God's we're not in charge of God's providence.
No.
We are not in charge of what happens. I mean, little parts of our life, but in the big picture of things, there are many things that happen outside of our control. and we react and we try to do the best with it. And golf, if you want to be a golfer, you have to accept the providence of God, because things are not going to go the way you planned.
No, it was Donald Ross, a famous golf designer. One of the things he loved about golf, he says, is in golf, there, all of life somehow appears. A branch that the guy next door that just hits will hit, he'll miss the branch by this much. But then you, who have a better shot and make a better shot at a better angle, somehow that one little branch hits your ball, right. The ball goes down. So sometimes it can't be controlled. Like, yes. Life and golf have a lot of similarities. Yes.
So some people will go to a golf course and they'll say these greens are way too slow, or these this course is unfair. I hit it there, right. And then it bounced into the water. And why did it bounce right when the slope is the opposite direction?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things in golf that you just can't explain, and you can be grumpy about it, or you can accept that there are things in your life that are out of your control, that somehow God can still work for your good.
Right. So in the game of life, so to speak, golf has a lot of metaphors,
yes.
For how we experience the vicissitudes, the happen chance of things.
Yes.
Sometimes something bad happens, a good break, you'll call it, occurs. And yes. Sometimes you call it lucky.
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes you do everything right and it doesn't work.
Right.
And in fact, it's a little bit like the book of Job.
Yes. Yeah.
At a game level. Now, again, you can't make this comparison all the way across the board, but it does feel like Job sometimes.
It does. And I think golf can reveal where people in a way are. Are you
right.
a kind of person that is always blaming and never taking responsibility, or not able to accept the negative things that happen in your life? I mean, golf will reveal kind of your theology on providence.
Right. And when you're a minister, it will reveal the providence of that person that you're golfing
yes.
with. And so you will, by 18 holes, if as a minister, and you're golfing with someone and they're confronted
yes.
with the vicissitudes of golf shots,
right.
you will know how to minister to that
right.
person in a
right.
way you never could have learned.
So if you pay attention to these theology of golf, it will reveal things about you.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But it will also reveal things about those you're playing with.
So it also will reveal your ethics.
Ethics. Proverbs 2, verse 20. Thus you will walk in the ways of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous.
Now, interesting, the context of that one is, my son, stay away from the harlot. Stay away from lustful temptations. And then it has this passage, thus you will walk in the ways of good men and keep the paths of the righteous.
So what does golf have to do with ethics?
There are rules. In golf.
There are rules in golf.
I mean, really, any game has rules.
Any game, football. I mean, the reason football is because it has rules that make it not look like basketball.
Right. I like that passage because it's about good men. In other words, there is a little bit, every game that you play has its own set of rules.
That people that want to excel at this game follow.
Yes.
And if you don't follow what the good people are doing in
right.
this game, you're not going to be very good at it.
No. And you'll be highly disrespected by those you're playing with, because they're all wanting to play the game according to the rules of the good men.
And golf
and good women.
Golf is a great illustration of all of this, because golf, unlike many sports, you are in charge of your ethics. You
right.
are in charge. You are supposed to call yourself out on any mistakes that you make. Whereas in other games, it's an umpire saying you're
right.
out or you're in. And if you can get away with something,
you
know, the player will try to get away with something. In golf, there's no umpire. You're the umpire. And so it's really like the Christian life. Mm-hmm. In the Christian life, you are in charge of your life. And most people don't know what you're doing in the dark.
Right.
But the, in the ethic of golf, it doesn't matter. You could be in the woods,
right,
and no one is going to see what you do.
Right.
But the ethics of golf is that you don't throw down a ball, you know, because you can't find yours, so you throw another one without taking a penalty. You
right.
have to call a penalty on yourself.
I know. And you know, it's really, you know, I've moved my ball sometime, and all golfers have. And I don't know what happens to you, but I feel so guilty that I, like, I actually do bad on two or three holes afterwards because I feel like...
You pay for your
I do. I go like, you know, I didn't move that ball. I should take a bogey here, maybe a double. And then I should have just... You know, so early in my life, I realized in that whole struggle of ethics, how conscience and guilt and all of that even plays into it.
Right. And so when you're playing with someone, let's say you're playing with an unbeliever, you know, and he's cheating all the time, and people will do this too.
Yeah.
So what did you shoot on the last hole? Well, I shot a five. When he shot a six, he makes a mistake on what his score is, but it's always to his favor.
Yes.
You know, so there's plenty of people who do that. Well, you know that they struggle with ethics.
Right. And you can minister to them
right.
because you know this is one of their struggles.
Yes.
Well, then there's grace and sin.
Yes. Well, we all know about that, but Ephesians 2, 4 through 10.
But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in our transgressions.
It is by grace you have been saved. And God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus.
In order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace expressed in his kindness to us in Christ Jesus.
For it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not of yourselves, it is the gift of God.
Not by works, so that no one can boast.
For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do.
Okay, so there's an interesting and powerful passage. It seems like a salvation passage, grace and sin.
So it starts out, we're dead in our transgressions.
Mm-hmm.
And If you enter the game of golf, you will commit a lot of sins. Did you know, Henry, that the English word sin actually is an old archery term?
Right.
And it meant miss the mark. Okay, you're shooting, you're trying to hit the target, and you miss the target, and they would say, sin. Well, in golf, there's a lot of sins,
right?
Because you're trying to hit it down the fairway, and instead you put it into the woods.
It's a hard game.
It's a tremendously hard game. I mean, if you watch professionals, they do less, but
right.
they'll put it into the woods too,
right.
Or they'll put it into the pond, or they'll put it twice into the pond. I mean,
right.
we've seen this. So there's a lot of sin, but what's the way out of that sin? How do you recover from all this negativity in golf?
Right. It's grace.
It's the grace.
Right.
And we're gonna talk in the next few sections about how you can apply grace in the relationships, you know, because golf is a relational game.
Right.
You generally play it with some others. How to apply, you know, without the law... is sort of the rules of the game.
Right.
And if we just bend every law, soon we don't have a game.
Right.
But if we don't introduce a little bit of grace at strategic places, this game is no fun if no one wants to play.
And nobody wants to play with you.
Right.
No, I like to play golf, and I play in various tournaments at my level, which isn't that great. But, you know, we have our friends who have, you know, similar types of handicaps. We play our games and all that. And when I'm confronted at work, I missed that putt, and I shouldn't do this, but maybe I made too much of an idol out of it that day, but I am just, like, mad at myself.
Right.
And I can't, you know, I'm like, I look at that putt again and again and again. It's not until grace where I just realize that it's only a game.
Right.
I have to give myself grace.
Yes.
But then I realize that, you know what, I have that trait in a lot of things. If I fail,
which is sort of a works righteousness, right?
I mean, then I have to say, Lord, why do I care so much about, you know, even my life and things in my life, things that didn't go my way?
Yeah, why does my feeling good about myself depend so much on whether I make this putt or not?
Right.
Am I wallowing in earning my feel good or my salvation, or relying on Christ for that feeling?
You know, God challenges us with law and grace, and I know we've talked about that in various classes here at Christian Leaders Institute, the tack between law and grace. And when you golf with others, they have the same tack, even if they are not believers or don't have anything to do with God in their mind, nothing to do with Christianity or anything like that. They vacillate between the law and grace thing.
That's what's interesting about the theology of golf, whether a person is a believer or not. They are involved in the theology. If they're golfing, they're involved in the theology of golf.
Right, exactly. Here's another one. Salvation and joy.
1 Peter 1:6-9. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials.
These have come, so that your faith of greater worth than gold, which perishes, even though refined by fire,
may be proved genuine and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed.
Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy.
For you are receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your soul.
Now, that's one of my favorite Bible verses. My father-in-law, who died in 2001, had that verse in memory. It was a favorite verse. I preached at his funeral. I actually used that passage because I know what it meant to him. And he used to talk about how the salvation was like the Pilgrim's Progress. It was a game. And just the context of that verse was the resurrection.
Right.
So Jesus defeated death. He defeated sin. And then because we're caught up in that living the Christian life, we're then caught up in joy and hope and all those things.
Right.
Salvation.
So we came up with this verse, strangely, in some ways, because we were thinking about one of the key things in golf is to have fun.
Yes.
I mean, if you're not having fun, you're going to stop playing golf.
You're
not going to. No one wants to play with someone who's not having fun.
Right.
And if you want to use golf as an evangelistic tool, if you can create an atmosphere where everyone is having fun regardless of what's going on or how well they're doing, then your chances of reaching them are that much greater. So we thought, well, what is the definition of fun? Mm-hmm. And then we thought, it's really salvation. Salvation.
Right.
Fun is when, you have this joy and this happiness. And generally, that's, because we live in this broken world, it's when things unexpectedly turn out great.
Right.
Or when you get saved, or when you were lost and you were found.
Right.
It's like,
the blind see.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the redemption motif.
The redemption motif is, in some ways, the where the fun finally resides. So the fun that most people have that don't have the redemption experience is sort of a make-believe thing. We're making a problem that really isn't a problem. That's golf, and I'm trying to get to this thing in four shots.
Right.
I've made a problem that doesn't really exist, and then when I make it, I have joy and happiness. But it's a made-up thing, right? Because I don't have the real thing. Which is the bigger story. So in some ways what we're saying is golf is like a picture of the real story.
Right.
And the fun that we experience and the laughter and the joy is really a picture of what redemption is.
And especially because A is a hard game. B, the vicissitudes, it's very uncertain what's going to happen.
Yes.
C, they're taxed between law and grace, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And you have your own spiritual ethics to figure this whole thing out. It all comes together. And if you can walk this path, rejoicing and seeing the game in its context, it is a powerful witness.
Yes, yes. Oh, even with that, if you have this redemption motif in your head, you hit it down the middle and you go, all right,
yeah.
But then you put it in the woods.
Right.
Okay. But, you know, when I put it in the woods, I walk to the ball and I go, okay, what great shot do I now have the opportunity to attempt? You
right.
know, I got to get it between
yeah.
this tree little window tree, of yeah. two things, mm-hmm. and there's a sand trap. Maybe I can bounce it in front, and I don't know. We'll see what happens. And
yeah, exactly. Just powerful and so interesting.
Okay, sanctification and habits.
Philippians 3:17. Join with others in following my example, brothers, and take note of those who live according to the pattern we gave you.
So this is Paul, and he's writing, saying that there's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Christianity, by the way, was first called the Way, right? In Antioch, the Christians were called the Way. And these were the non-Christians calling it that.
Right.
Because they saw that Christianity was a way of life.
Right.
We tend to think of Christianity as a belief system.
Yes.
You know, we believe in Jesus, we believe
right.
In eternal life, we believe in the cross, and the resurrection, all these things. But the early people that saw the first Christians, they saw it as a way,
right.
a pattern of life.
They did.
And so Paul is saying there is this new pattern of life that's
right.
based on love. And we're trying to show you this pattern, and we're encouraging you to follow it.
And there are the habits, and you got to practice. And
yeah,
there's
yeah. It doesn't
things,
come
right.
This isn't. By the way, people get confused between sanctification and justification. Justification
mm-hmm.
is, you know, we're justified by the grace of God. We stand holy before God because of what Jesus did on the cross. And it's not our works. It's not
right.
our effort. It's not anything that we do. That's justification.
Right.
Sanctification is what we do after we receive the grace.
Yes.
Okay? We're not trying to earn anything.
Right.
But sanctification is becoming more and more like Christ.
Yeah.
And that actually takes work.
Yeah.
And for example, the more you practice at being a good dad, the better you become at being a good dad. The more, my wife is an excellent piano player, but she just didn't inherit that gift.
Right.
She's practiced since she was 7 years old.
Right.
And so in golf, it's the same thing.
Right. And we have a little encouragement and warning here. Don't do this so much that you do not practice being a great dad or a great
right.
mom.
Right.
Remember, this is part of your recreation time that may have
yes.
wonderful benefits for the gospel.
Right. And we'll talk more about it, how you apply it to evangelism, but it is a great opportunity because most people that play golf understand that you have to practice in order to get better. But those same people don't understand that they have to practice being a better person
yeah.
to be a better person,
yeah.
to be a better husband, to be
walk
a better
with
father.
God, it means you actually read the Bible and pray.
Yeah.
And we were just at a tournament recently, and we came up to the first hole that we were playing, and the first thing out of that one man's mouth is, oh, you're a minister? Oh, I haven't been in church in a long time.
Yeah.
I haven't been, you know,
yeah.
like the practice of the faith yeah. immediately pricked his conscience.
Yes.
And then, well, we said we were just having a little fun. We'll talk about these principles later. Well, you're in church sort of now with two ministers,
yes.
so we'll work you over a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But it was fascinating how even the intuitively this person felt
right.
like the habits of the faith were far from him when he met us.
Right. Interesting.
Eschatology.
That's a big word. Eschatology. Before we move on, we better talk about eschatology.
Eschatology is really the study of the end times. Like, you know, we know how the beginning was. God created the world, and we know sin came into the world, and then the hope and the plan of rejection.
But eschatology relates to us, to our end times.
Yes.
So it relates both to our end times and when Jesus Christ comes back in time.
It's
the future.
Yeah, it's sort of, in a broad general way, it's about a person's future and purpose and meaning, all of those things.
Okay, Psalm 38, verse 4, show me, O Lord, my life's end. Okay, there you go. That's the personal eschatology.
Yeah.
In the number of my days, let me know how fleeting is my life.
Right. 1 Corinthians 9:25. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever.
So, first of all, I think it was interesting that Paul used sports metaphors.
Yeah.
You know, some people might be saying, golf and theology, you know, they're having a hard time with it, and you're about to write us an email saying, you can't do that. And then, fortunately, we're encouraged that Paul did something like that, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
Not to justify what we're doing, but we feel better about it ourselves.
Yes.
Because we see that Paul used that, and Peter, too, even.
Well, and I think, again, in terms of an evangelistic thing, Paul used it because people understood it.
Yes.
He was trying to make a point, and now he's making an illustration that people readily understand so that they can understand something more difficult. Right. So obviously this was a thing. People right. understood it right away. And so we're, in some ways, we're trying to do the same thing, that this is readily understandable in the golf world, and now we have a way to apply it to something more important.
So we're talking eschatology now. So is golf like the end game or
some,
the end
in
of
some
your
ways,
life?
You know, you and I, when we golf, there was, you know, when you get to that first hole, you have all 18 holes ahead of you.
Yeah.
And there's a certain, that, you know, you've been looking forward to it. You arranged the golf
today.
Yeah.
You know,
how's it going to go?
A new game is born.
Yes. Yeah. And then you get past the first hole jitters, and the second hole, you get down to business, and then the third. And then, before you know it, you're rounding the corner. The golf is divided into two nines. So there's nine holes. And that's because the original courses, they used, there were like nine holes, and there were two flags in each hole. And you'd go out, and then you'd come back.
Oh, right, right.
So there's 18 holes. So we arbitrarily just divide it into nine, so you did the first nine. And when you're done with it, I know, you know, when we're playing and we've been looking forward to it, it's a great course. Let's say it's a course we don't get to play very often. After nine holes, it's like, man, half of it's done.
I know.
Just like what we say when we turn 35, 40. Oh, man, my life is half done. So the number of holes sort of mimic life. And then all of a sudden, it's hole 16, 17. You only have one or two holes to go. And it's like, what happened? We were looking forward to this.
Right.
And it was all in the future, and now most of it's in the past.
Right. I remember when we first started golfing, we were probably together on hole like five. And now we're in our 60s.
Yeah.
Call that hole 14, right?
Yeah.
Let's make it 12.
Yeah.
Know? Like my dad made it to 99. So, no,
my grandfather made it to 100.
Yeah, so let's. Yeah, you know, we're trying to story this that, yeah, yeah. you know, we're only on hole 12.
11, yeah.
Yeah. But it does. You know, a lot of people think like that in their life. And that's a powerful metaphor.
And it's a great discussion starter, right? Like, you know, man, life is going so fast. This game is going so fast. Life is going this fast. And people, because they're golfing it, they feel it too.
We do.
And so it's a great way to have a conversation.
Now,
go back to that verse.
Okay, I will. Go one by. There you go.
You know, 1 Corinthians, everyone competes in games, goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last.
Right.
You know, people love golf. They're into golf. And when they get done with 18, they always want one more. That one course has a 19th hole.
Oh, yeah.
In Illinois. What's that course again?
Oh, Cog Hill.
Cog Hill. Yeah, they always have an 18th hole. Yeah. And that always feels kind of good. Most courses don't have that. So, or some people have the 19th hole, it's called, and that's where you get your drinks and something to eat and so on. So in life, we always want a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you know what? Every person that's non-Christian wants a little bit more, too. And see, that's your chance to talk about eschatology, which is, what is it? We are not doing golf because golf gives the final answer.
No.
That's a crown that will not last.
Right.
Not that crowns that don't last aren't worth doing. Right. There's plenty of things that we do in life that aren't going to last.
Right.
But we redeem those things towards a crown that will last.
You know, one more thing about the crown that will not last. Golf is just a game.
Yes.
And we understand that. In fact, this is a fun little class we're doing because we feel like that golf has benefited the gospel in our particular personal testimony.
Right.
Of evangelism.
Yeah.
So because of that, we have met various ministers, and many people have said, oh, I'd like to know how to golf. I don't know how to do it. I've heard it again and again and again. Yeah. And even MCLI students have said, oh, I wish I knew how to golf. Yeah. So we prayed about it. We said, let's just do a class on golf. Even I know it's a crown that doesn't last.
But, you know, we've had to, you know, sometimes we do take it too seriously.
Yes.
And then we're grumpy and things aren't going well, and then one of us will remind the other, it's just a game.
It's just a game.
And we remind, what's our purpose here?
Right.
Our purpose is to be an example of the gospel, not golf.
And have conversations and have relationships.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the grumpiness or the pressure or whatever we had is gone.
Exactly. Okay, so the next slide here is redemption. Yes. We'll come back to it. We had salvation before, but we're even talking about redemption, like almost a human redemption, sort of.
Yeah. 2 Timothy 2:5, similarly, if anyone competes as an athlete, he does not receive the victor's crown unless he competes according to the rules.
What does that have to do with redemption, Professor Elzinger?
Well, I think what we're talking about is how, well, when you go up to the first hole, even when you're with friends that you've known forever, they've seen your game, they've seen how badly or how good you play, you get to that you get to that first tee off, and you're a bit nervous.
Right.
Because there's pressure.
There is.
Or when you have a 3-foot putt for a birdie, you should make that putt.
Right.
But you miss 3-putters too. And so you're standing over there, and you don't get many 3-foot birdie chances.
Right.
They
or
come.
Par chance, maybe, for your bogey chance, depending on where you're at in the game.
And so there's all this pressure. And if you have a little competition with your friends, there's even more pressure. And what is that? What is pressure?
Right.
And how does that relate to redemption?
Well, in some ways, when you overcome that nervous feeling and hit the ball despite it, and or make a great shot out of the woods, or make that putt, there's an exhilaration, and you know it adds into previous themes of salvation. But in a lot of ways, in golf, you take those pressure-filled moments and figure out how to relax. You figure out how to make the putt. You figure out how not to make it so important. You know, for instance, for me, if I putt and I think about the result, if I think in my mind, I'm going to make this to get a 3, I don't make it as much.
Yeah.
But if I just think to myself, just hit the ball, see the ball, see the hole, who cares, it's only a game. But then all of a sudden, that feels like redemption.
Yes. So on the other side, if you think about things that put pressure on you, it's because you think they're important.
Right. That's
it's
my
like
point.
There's a meaning and there's a purpose to it. And everything gets heightened because if there was nothing important in your life, you didn't care about anything, you'd have no pressure whatsoever.
Right.
And there are plenty of people that live that way. They don't do anything.
Right.
They're not attempting anything. I mean, if you're in a workplace and you want to advance to the next level at your work, there's a bit of pressure on you to perform, to do something.
Right.
And if you're going to go into the boss and ask for a raise, there's a bit of pressure on you. But it's because you think that thing is important.
Right.
So in some ways, we make golf more important than it is. And that gives us a sense of pressure. But that's not always a bad thing.
No.
Because in some ways, we're practicing making things important. Because so many people, there's nothing important.
Right.
So now, on the bad side, is you can make something an idol, and you're making it more important than it is. And now you're feeling all this pressure over something that really doesn't matter at all. And so in some ways, the pressure we feel to accelerate and do a great shot, we should really be under pressure that in this next 4 hours, help me, Lord, be a better witness to the people that I am with.
Right.
Especially Bob here, who's not a Christian and doesn't believe.
Right.
That should be the pressure that we really feel.
Well, in the victor's crown, as a Christian, we define the victor's crown just a little different, because whether win or lose, it's about glorifying God, it's about loving our neighbor, and it's still competing
yes.
in a way, yes. but in competing differently. So that sets up an incredible witness,
yes.
and we're going to talk about that in future presentations.
Yes.
So welcome aboard to this. Now, we've got some instruction videos
yes.
next in this mini course,
yes.
and what we would suggest you would do is let's watch the videos and get your vocabulary
yeah.
you know, going. A lot of the stuff you're going to see, if you're not much into golf, you're going to hear terms that you maybe haven't ever heard before, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Just get the gist of
get
it.
Get the gist of it. If you can get one thing to try,
yeah. yep.
then you go out and try that. I mean, that's how we got into
yeah.
this guy.
Yeah.
We watched a couple of videos, and there was one thing that we both, the hinge.
Really
we
got to
get
yeah,
the hinge thing. And then later, you know, when we're going to do more of this theology, you know, stuff, but we're going to come back to some practical things that you and I have learned with just the practical things of golf, and we may explain some of those things that you may have missed with Paul.
So, watch the videos.
Yeah.
Take notes if you want to. Don't take yourself too seriously to try
right.
something.
Yeah.
Don't quit
right.
just because it's like, I can't get the ball to move. Don't quit.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
go through the whole process of the class
yeah.
and then make some of your decisions after you're all done.
Yes.
Have a great day.
Yeah.